tips, recipes for leaders and high performers, and helping you to preserve your sanity and humanity in this time of relentless change. I'm Gareth Hawkins, scale-up investor and principal consultant and coach at Enterprise Insights in London. I'm joined from Dubai Marina by Kieran O'Neill, mindset coach and founder of Total Mental Performance. Hi, Kieran.
Hey, Gareth. Good to be here.
In this edition, we'll be spending some time discussing ESG and what it means for businesses of all sizes, not just corporations. But before we do, we'd like to start every episode with something perhaps from the left field, loosely or indirectly related to the main themes of the podcast. So, Kieran, what's caught your attention this week?
I think it's almost the opposite. What am I trying to bring out of my attention? So I'm reading a book or listening to a book called Deep Work by Cal Newport. And essentially what the book is pointing out to us is that, and we all know this, as we all consciously know, yes, the age of distraction, we get lots of emails, we get lots of calls, but it kind of takes a little bit more of a different perspective on that. And what he's talking about is the winners in today's economy are those that are able to do deep work. What he means by that is being able to enter a flow state and sticking to one task and going really deep without a message on Slack, without an email, without a phone call, without switching between Zoom calls. And he references Carl Jung. And what Carl Jung used to do is he used to have a cabin out in the middle of nowhere, and he used to go lock himself in there for weekends. Nobody would be able to get hold of him. He'd just be in there working, writing, exploring his ideas. And through that was where some of his biggest breakthroughs and some of his best work was produced. He goes on to give various different examples within the book of performers getting stuck and getting distracted, and talking about, on a neurological level, something called thinking residue. How when we switch between tasks, we're actually, even though consciously focused on the new task, we're still bringing some of our old thinking, and in the background, it's still focused on that. And in this world where we're constantly switching, constantly doing different things, actually cutting out all of the noise and just focusing on that task at hand is where he believes the winners are really going to be. And as humans' attention spans are getting smaller and smaller, as we've seen in numerous different studies, as we're becoming more distracted, we have to retain less knowledge because machines hold it all for us. Actually, he argues those that are able to do deep work and get into flow state in those moments are the ones that are really being able to get ahead. So it's almost as if less is more insofar as tasks and focus.
Okay, so it's speaking effectively to how to find flow state in this time of attention fragmentation through lots of different types of distractions.
Yeah, exactly that.
Sounds like a great read. I'll check it out. Just remind me of the title and the author again.
Yeah, it's Deep Work by Cal Newport. How about you?
Very busy, lots of things going on. I've joined a platform called Connected, which is super interesting. It's a very much a direct dialogue with startups and scale-ups who are seeking investment as well as seeking NEDs and mentors. And it's clear that there are some really exciting ventures in the London startup community currently, not least some great innovations in AI and a few really groundbreaking projects in the fintech and social verticals. But beyond those destined for financial success, Connected.co has also introduced me to several incredible projects in the clean tech community and environmental spaces. These are doing amazing things that will deliver value for the planet, for charities, and to help them make some fundamental changes away from the damaging consequences of consumerism. For example, there's a biotech materials venture led by a couple of ICL postgrads that have developed a new compostable form of single-use plastic produced from seaweed. And all this growing visibility of young companies doing environmental and social good got me thinking more about how that figures in established businesses. I recall when Google was once defined by the mantra, don't be evil, and how that drove them to reinvest profits into X, their moonshot factory. Now, with the rising attention being paid to ESG, I'm hopeful we'll see many more corporations overtly investing in helping to solve for Earth and address some of that much discussed but still unresolved global challenges that we face. So what is all this ESG we've heard so much about as a new paradigm for investors and stocks? Well, it's an abbreviation of environmental, social and governance, which sounds quite prosaic. For those like me who've been around in business and leadership for a couple of decades or more and are long enough in the tooth to recall former iterations, it may be tempting to see ESG simply as a superset of CSR, corporate social responsibility.
But actually, it goes further than that and is more the convergence of CSR, sustainability, stewardship and responsible capitalism from the board down, permeating entire organisations and evident in their policies, practices, culture, behaviours. I guess where perhaps Sarbanes-Oxley and its ilk were brute force compliance tools for good governance, ESG brings the power of market forces and activist shareholders to achieve good corporate citizenship. But why is it now important? Well, in September 2015, world leaders adopted the 17 sustainability goals of the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development from the UN. And these officially came into force in January 2016. And since then, public consciousness in the Western world has continued to awaken to fairness and to the responsibility of companies to be forces for good, both in local communities and in wider global society. Since the days of J. Pierpont Morgan and the robber baron industrialists, businesses have sort of carried a stigma and a suspicion of inherent self-interest at the expense of honesty and integrity. And the adage that absolute power corrupts absolutely has shown itself many times over the course of history. But in the age of Facebook data harvested by Cambridge Analytica and the consequent political micro-targeting, the carbon fuel defeat device scandal of several European automakers, drug price gouging by the pharma bro and the pernicious policies of some unscrupulous payday loan companies, to name but a few examples, the resulting stain is hard to wash off, despite the vast majority of businesses actually seeking to do good and be net contributors to, rather than abusers of, humanity and the natural environment. So ESG is a framework of values and practices that define a culture that is the polar opposite of such examples, and which serve as a de facto code of conduct for companies and organisations that seek to genuinely solve for Earth in upholding their side of the new covenant with it. Today, there are research and risk rating agencies such as Sustainalytics and FTSE Russell, and these collect, monitor and score corporations on their ESG performance. So they play a vital role in helping investors make informed decisions about the types of companies they want to associate with or to have in their portfolio. But ESG is not just relevant to corporations, it's also pertinent to SMEs as well, because conglomerates, hedge funds and private equity groups don't escape the scrutiny. They're actively placing ESG values at the heart of their operations, which permeate through to their subsidiaries. And this means that any SME with even a tentative desire to consider a future divestment through share sale to such an institution should also be adopting an ESG focus now, so that they're appealing and aligned when the time comes. In the UK, this can be achieved through a good benchmarking of pay grades, benefits and working conditions for staff, actively seeking diversity in the workforce and board makeup, adopting ISO 14001 as an environmental management system, tracking and optimising carbon footprint using platforms such as the Footprint Manager from the Carbon Trust, or signing up to become accredited by the Good Business Charter, which includes requirements for ethical sourcing and prompt payment. Even joining programmes such as Investors in Community, of which I'm a keen ambassador. IIC helps businesses to track the community good and CSR activities that they pursue, so that social value through things like fundraising, sponsoring and volunteering, among many others, can be placed at the heart of the company's culture.
This often involves companies you're looking to do some sort of charitable good with some of their profits. And Kieran, in your business at Total Mental Performance, I know you've got a higher purpose that you serve in Africa. Tell us a bit about that, mate.
Yeah, for sure. So ultimately, our goal is to help 1,000 people by the end of 23 with their mindsets and self-limiting beliefs. And the way that we're going to do that is, it's always been really important to me to be able to give back across the socioeconomic scale. So we work with high performers, and high performers often have lots of resources in order to allow them to be the best and to perform at where they are. But not everybody is that fortunate to have those resources or that support. For me, I've always been a meaning man, and I find that when I have meaning to something bigger than myself, it's a lot easier for me to get out of bed in the morning, do the hard yards and get up and go. So the way I figured it was, how can I incentivize myself and my colleagues and our clients to scale TMP to where we want to get to, but in a way upon which we can help others? And the way that we done it is we work with a charity called Amaldo, and they're a mental health charity in Africa. And what they do is essentially work with mentally ill homeless people. And that's the number one cause of homelessness in this particular area of Nigeria. So what Amaldo do is they provide residential and psychiatric care to these people. And for each phase that a TMP client completes, they cover the residential care and psychiatric care for 2 weeks for somebody in the Amaldo center. And what it does is not only is the TMP client massively inspired through their own change, they're also realizing that actually, while I'm helping myself and helping someone else, there's almost a psychological element of, hey, you're not doing this alone. We're all in it together. We're all interconnected. So that's what we do. Eventually, as we start to scale and get bigger, I would love to do something in the UK with mental health for young people. So we also use that as a part of our hiring to understand, okay, does this person have similar values to us insofar as always giving back and always passing back on, whether it's knowledge or resources or whatever, you know? There's a bigger mission, and everybody that's attracted to our mission understand that it's not just about revenue. All of our advisors understand it's not just about revenue, that there's always going to be that element of giving back.
And it's a great motivator for leaders and also their teams that you're doing such great work that pays forward the benefits and fruits of that work to some folks that are less fortunate or less able to direct their own future. And that money goes so much further in places like West Africa than maybe it would do in the more developed Western world. So, you know, I can imagine how transformational that's being on the lives of those folks that are in that program and receiving that kind of support. So, yeah, well done. You make a point about how it's a good recruiting tool. I read statistics the other day that actually for a number of sort of millennial demographics, having a mission like that, having a social good, an element of CSR or ESG in the business actually motivates them to want to work for those kind of companies and build a career with those companies, almost like it's as important or sometimes more important than the remuneration that they're paid or the bonuses that they earn. The fact that they are working for an honest and socially motivated business is increasingly important to people entering the workforce today.
I think we look at the younger generations, I call it the meaning generation, because if we look at our grandparents and their grandparents and their grandparents, they've always, most of them have lived lives of scarcity. There wasn't as much to go around. Whereas we're not really in that position. We're in one of the luckiest periods of history, if not the luckiest periods of history, on written record. So for where our young people are coming in now, it's coming more, well, how can I meaningfully spend my time? Because it's now a case of, okay, well, what do I find meaningful? And I guess the testament to how far we've come as a society in terms of how lucky we are and how fortunate we are to ask these questions. So I think that's part of the trend we're seeing with the younger generation coming through is, well, I don't just want to go to work to survive. I want to go to work and build something, do something meaningful.
And you mentioned to me in conversation the other day that there isn't as much challenges around scarcity in the Western world as there once was. And you've just alluded to that, that, you know, just inside three generations, it's gone from being problems of scarcity and not having enough to where we are today, where many problems that we face existentially are about abundance and being able to decide between the options available to us or how well to use those options that are available to us and put them to a greater good. So it is interesting how far we've come in such a short space of time.
It is. It's always, whenever someone asks me, what are you struggling with at the moment? I answer 80% of the time, it's quite boring. I just have abundance problems because I just recognize how fortunate every single challenge I have really genuinely is, you know? And that's the challenge of today. So we have so many opportunities, so many different markets we can go at, there's so many different types of people we can hire, we can get access to funding really easily. You know, I want my shopping done here in Dubai, I can have it here literally within 20 minutes, do not need to go to the shops. So we have all of these different options, but our minds and our bodies are built for scarcity. So I guess really to get ahead now is understanding that a lot of our challenges are abundance issues. And how, number one, accepting that and being grateful for that and loving that for what it is, but then also minimizing that choice, cut out the noise and focus very, very much on what is the minimum, whether that's a goal, whether that's a target, whether that's where you want to take your business, whether that's where you want to take your team, hiring, whatever. You've got to cut out all of that noise and go, right, this is what we think we want and need, and we're going to go for it. Because we're always going to get lots of different distractions, lots of different inputs. The markets are all going to change. And unless we just get hyper-focused and cut all of that out, it's going to get really tough. And that's where anxiety comes in.
And it boils down to something of a self-fulfillment type of problem, right? If we're wired to be out hunter-gathering, you know, in the absence of that, when it can be delivered by a guy on a moped 20 minutes after clicking OK on the app, well, how do we fill that void? Actually, the most sentient amongst us realize how lucky and grateful we can be and make use of that spare time to go and do things more productively for the betterment of society. Surely we have a duty to pay forward that freedom that we're afforded.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's down to us. No one else is going to do it for us.
Well, thank you, Kieran. That's enlightening as usual. So I want to turn our attention to something I talked about at the end of our previous episode, and that is guilt, both the rational and irrational kind, but specifically in regards to leaders who often are trying to serve different stakeholders, different masters, trying to reconcile what their employers and owners and founders, and shareholders want, but on the flip side of the coin, what their customers and colleagues might want, and they're not always the same thing. And so a conscientious leader who wants to serve the greater good might find themselves feeling that they've let one side of that equation down. How, in your experience, are leaders able to equip themselves with tools that help them to pay respect to that guilt, but not let it weigh them down, not let it trip them up?
Yeah, so there's a really interesting model. Now, it talks about rediscovering the masculine, and it talks about all about masculinity, but I actually think this model is very useful across both the sexes. And the book is called King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. And it's essentially a Jungian introduction to the psychological foundation of ultimately understanding your thinking and how you are thinking. So I've refined and done this down to, doesn't necessarily have to be king or queen, but ultimately getting to the point where you're thinking, what is best for the kingdom? Because often we can get pulled into lots of different ways of thinking and feeling. So the sub-archetypes within this model are warrior, magician, and lover. Warrior is in the guy that picks up a sword and has a go at everyone else. And the way you differentiate those is warrior is very much the part of you that wants to aggressively get stuff done. It wants to work really hard, and it's also willing to stand up for itself. But the dark side of the warrior archetype is very much, I must go there to dominate and win and fight and get aggressive and get angry and wants to, you know, really push itself on everyone else and the other things in its environment. Next, you have the magician. And the magician is very creative. It's problem solving. It's coming up with lots of different ideas how to solve different tasks. And it's that creative part of us where when we're presented with challenges, we're able to find a way. But the second half of magician is very much overthink. It's anxiety. It's, but maybe we can fix it this way or this way, or which one is the best. And it's that anxious part of us that tends to allow us to overthink. And the third is lover. And lover is all about looking after the people, taking care of everyone, making sure that everyone's okay. But the dark side of the lover is very much, well, maybe I need to put everyone else's needs first. And you might not consciously be doing that, but if a leader is worrying, you know, what's the board? I need to make sure the board are happy, but I need to make sure our team's happy, we need to make sure the clients are happy, we need to make sure that all the stakeholders are happy. Sometimes leaders will put that above their own self-care. And then they will start working longer hours, they'll start isolating themselves, saying their families are putting everything in there that they forget to look after themselves. So a really good way of thinking of it, and this is a really nice metaphor, is obviously you want to be king or queen. And the king or the queen listens to their warriors, they listen to the magician, they listen to the lover, but ultimately they do what is best for the kingdom. And if what is best for the kingdom is going to piss a few people off, and it might even be against what you really want to do, but actually, you know, for the greater good for that kingdom, so to speak, then really that's what you need to be thinking about. I've actually got it written on the wall behind me, what would the king do? So if I'm presented with a challenge, sure, I can respond with magician, oh yeah, but I could overcome it this way. Or sure, I could go lover and be like, oh, maybe they just need a lot more support, or, you know, maybe I'll just compromise on my morning routine and maybe go out for an early lunch. Or maybe my warrior is like, no, I'm going to set a boundary here, I'm not having this. But actually, by going back to the king and thinking, well, what's best for the kingdom? What does this actually need? That's really what I would suggest to leaders. So if they're feeling a lot of guilt, a lot of shame around, oh, I'm going to have to piss some people off. Well, at the end of the day, you've got to go, right, well, what's best for the kingdom? If that's what needs to be done, and deep down you know what needs to be done, then do the thing.
So whilst we're using all of those different archetypes and personality traits in a general sort of mix and makeup of a person, of a leader, we have to channel the king mindset if we want to contextualize the effects of the decisions we're having to make and find peace with the fact that they serve the greater good.
Exactly that. Because otherwise, you'll just get stuck. And often it's the magician that's overthinking, or the lover's feeling bad, or, you know, the warrior wants to protect. But that's not helpful. You've got to think, who does this serve? And if you look at the kingdom as a whole, it's much easier to think that way in the macro sense rather than thinking in the micro sense for individuals. You've got to think, you guys are all working in a business, you're working in a company, and the mission is bigger than each individual. It's almost like the football mentality. No player is bigger than this club. It's the same thing. You've got to do what's best for the kingdom. You've got to do what's best for the club.
That is super helpful. Thanks so much for that, Kieran.
And that book again is King, Warrior, Magician, Lover by Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette. It's an oldie but a goodie, published in 1990, but well worth a read, as it sort of defines and explains the archetypes that really make up our psyche still today. So thanks for listening. We hope you found today's episode of interest. If you did, please press that subscribe button on your podcast app so that you can receive our future episodes automatically. Looking ahead, the format of this podcast is evolving. We've got some fantastic interviews lined up with some insightful leaders, authors, activists, and mentors. In the next episode, I'll be speaking with Jane Baylor, the Smart Connector, on the importance of a congruent voice in multi-channel marketing. If you'd like to join our discussion or recommend a guest for a future episode, please reach out on social media. I'm on Twitter at GPG Hawkins. Kieran's on Instagram at Total Mental Performance. Or you can email us at podcast@ceoptimist.com. Until then, believe that we can collectively do better, and remember to live with intention, make choices based on your values, and not let the choices of other people define you.